started as a 3 or 4 week series. I'm not sure how long it will take. And it's just around this whole concept of something that we don't talk about too much, is death and dying and what happens after. And we're going to try and look at it from just a biblical view so we can really get our heads around that. But let's pray for God's blessing on this series.
What your word says about heaven and what happens to us. So Lord, I just commit this time to you. I thank you for the preparation that we've just put in, just seeking your heart on this, and I pray that we will be anointed, and that you will open our eyes and give us fresh revelation of who you are and what you've got in store for us.
Has had a loved one die during a lifetime. Most, if not all of us. And if we don't, if we haven't yet, it will happen. It's not always an easy process, is it? And I was thinking, you know, it was only a couple of weeks ago Marty's mum suddenly and unexpectedly passed away. Perfectly healthy, and then they got called back from Wellington. Sasha and Marty were down there for a conference, going to the Arise conference. They flew down to Wellington, got the news, and they flew back before they even started the conference. I mean, death can be like that. It can just step into our lives and change everything in a moment, can't it? When a loved one passes on, something unexpected and tragic happens. We don't always get much warning. I was thinking, not only Marty's mum a couple of weeks ago, wasn't that long before when Mrs. Konings passed on, it was about a month or 6 weeks ago, something like that, end of June. And also Kathy, who used to sit here and be my cheerleader girl, encourage me along, and she's not here anymore, she's gone. That's the thing about death, it's an end and it's final in this life. But it's just the beginning of more. So we're going to look at this as we go through this little series. I think traditionally death is not something that we talk about too much. It's not something we really want to talk about, is it? It's not actually an exciting subject. But it's something that I think we need to think through, because it's something that we're all going to face sooner or later, unless Jesus returns first. Let's bring it on. Jesus, come back. And I think, you know, we've often heard that little saying, there's two inevitable things in life. What are they? Death and taxes. We've all been taxed, and one day the moment will come for us as well. I know there's, I often go to the sale yards at Frankton there, and selling stock or buying something or whatever, and you get to know a few old characters that hang around the sale. And there's one old guy that used to be a local out here at Raglan, and he's living a bit nearer to Hamilton, somewhere on a small block, and he always has a yarn, and he always likes to talk about whose funeral he's been to recently, and the old farmers, and who's passed on and who's hasn't. And his little favourite line is, you know, the queue is getting shorter. He always tells about you, Roger, you know, the queue is getting shorter. And I thought, well, actually, he's quite right, really. In Hebrews chapter 9, verse 27, the Word of God says, it is appointed unto man once to die, and then the judgment. It's a reality of life, and it's good occasionally to stop and think about what it might be like and make sure we're prepared. There are lots of ideas out there about what happens when we die and what happens after we die. Some people say that they believe, I'm not sure if they really do believe, that it is the end and there is nothing more. Have you ever heard anybody say that? That, you know, before you were born you knew nothing, And the moment you die, there is nothing. And there's no, you know nothing anymore. And what a terrible thought. That what a futile way to live, that once we take our last breath, is nothing. And that's certainly not what the Bible teaches. And in fact, the Bible speaks about heaven over 500 times as being a real place, not just the sky, heavens. It talks about the place of heaven. And actually, I can't guarantee that it's 500 times because I was reading through the concordance and I lost count of how many. I just added up the columns roughly. There's at least, I reckon, 500 times that the Bible speaks about heaven as being a real and literal place that we will go to one day if we're ready for that. And so clearly God wants us to know that when we take our last breath, this is not the end. It's not the end. It's not all there is. It's actually just the beginning of a whole new chapter. Isn't that good to know? That actually the best is yet to come. It really is. I mean, we say that, and I believe that for us as a church and in this life. But even once we pass from this life, we're really just beginning, and the whole new chapter opens up, which is going to be far better than we've ever experienced here. Every culture and every religion has some belief in an afterlife, don't they? If you study different cultures and Eastern religions, for example, of Hinduism and Buddhism and Sikhism, which all have origins in India. Now, Mary might correct me on some of this statistics, but anyway. And apparently, Hinduism, Buddhism, and Sikhism, they're some of the major religions in the world. And there's millions and millions, billions of people that think and believe along these lines. So they all believe in reincarnation to varying degrees, which is simply that after you die, you come back around again and have another shot at it, and sometimes you might come back in a better situation or a worse one, or even if you're really bad, you might come back as a fly or something. I don't know. But that's one of the reasons why cows are sacred in India. And they're allowed to drink the milk, but they're not allowed to eat the meat. So they're not allowed to kill the cow for meat. And cows, I was actually reading something on the internet news, Yahoo, the great source of information, this last week caught my eye because of what I was thinking about, that in India, cows are worshipped as a mother figure by Hindus. And there are approximately 900 million Hindus in India, which makes up the majority of India's population, almost a billion people that believe that cows are like their mother. And it's all linked in with this whole reincarnation idea. And because of that, the cows over there are actually becoming a problem. Instead of being a blessing, they're a problem. And I saw in the news in this article on India's sacred cows some of the problems that they're causing. And just this little quote from this 55-year-old Indian. I'm not sure if it was a man or a woman. And their thinking was, the cow is not an animal. It is not an ordinary living thing. She is our mother, and her place should be at our home. That's what they think because of their beliefs. And the problem is that people milk the cows because they make money and profit out of the milk. But then when a cow gets to the point of not producing much milk, she gets old, she gets sick, or whatever reason, she's not suitable for milking anymore. They don't have any much value because they know you can't sell them for meat. And so all these farmers, they just release these old cows because they can't afford to keep feeding them for nothing. And so they just wander off down the road. And all over India, there's millions and millions of stray cows because no one wants to kill them to eat them, and no one wants to milk them. No one really wants them. And what they do is that they gather them in shelters. people that really, you know, they believe they're their mother. They believe that they could be, you know, somewhat something really special. Could be another person from a past life or whatever. And so they gather them into shelters, thousands and thousands of them, and they feed them. And they have vets attend them, and they massage them, and they look after them. And there's they estimate that there's 5 million stray cows wandering around in India or in these special shelters. They're aging, they're ailing, and they're no longer producing milk. But in Delhi alone, there's 110 shelters around Delhi, and some of these shelters house up to 7,000, or the biggest one, 7,800 cows. And you know, there's thousands and thousands of cows that are so well cared for, and yet there's people starving. And then you contrast that Hinduism thinking, and you think about the Muslim religion. Quite different. But right now, all around the world, one of the biggest challenges internationally is what? Terrorism, right? And suicide bombers. You know, it's almost impossible to defeat someone who's willing to strap a bomb to themselves and walk into a place with lots of people and blow everybody up, including themselves. Why do these guys do that? Mostly young Muslim men. Why do they kill themselves like this? There's reasons for this. Suicide terrorists believe that they will enter paradise because of their heroism. That's what they believe. And among the rewards, although some Muslims would deny it, it's actually in some of their teachings, and it is taught by some of their Imrams, whatever they call them, that they, when they enter paradise, these young men will receive 72 virgins in the next life. Crazy, isn't it? It's demonic, actually, that these young men can actually waste their lives on some such a false thing that they think they're going to experience. And then apparently if they commit this heroism of suicide in support of Allah or whatever, then 70 of their family members will have the right to come into paradise as well. So there's all sorts of teaching around this. See, what people believe about life after death determines how they live. It's happening all around the world, isn't it? Determines what they do here and now, whether it's rescuing old cows or blowing themselves up and trying to kill as many other people in the process. It's because of what they believe about the next life that they do these things. So what do we Christians believe? I think it's important to think about this and to realize that our beliefs and our understanding is completely different to the Muslim belief and the Hindu belief and the Buddhist belief. And actually, it was interesting, just a little side note, down at Black Sands the other day, I was talking to one of the ladies that owns the place, and she was saying, "Oh, Roger, the rent's too much, we're not making any profit, we're not doing any good here," and so on and so forth. And I said, "Would you like me to pray for you?" "No, I pray for her." And she said, "Oh, I don't know about that." And I said, "Why not?" She said, "Well, I'm Buddhist." And I said, "Well, think about it. And if you like, we could pray for you." And I think I'm okay. You know, what we believe is it relates to what we do, doesn't it? How we live. In March 2011, my mum was dying of cancer. Many of you would remember her. It wasn't that long ago. And about a week before she died, I can remember she gathered the family around. And because we all knew she didn't have long, everyone was making an effort to be there. I think just about all the family, except perhaps one or two of the grandchildren who were overseas or something, were there. And she gathered us around. And I remember she was well enough. She was staying at our place for the last few weeks. And Cheryl and my sister-in-law was nursing her and looking after her. But I remember she was well enough to get up. And she sat at the dining room table. And she gathered us all around the room. I mean, the family would remember that, you guys that were there. And she said, "It looks like I might be going to heaven soon. And there's one thing I want you all to do." And she was speaking to me, she was speaking to all our family, and all our grandkids, and her grandkids rather. And she said, "Please make sure that you all get there too. Because I want to have you all in heaven. I want to see you all in heaven with me one day." And that was a pretty powerful little time for us as a family. And it was only a few days later that Mum asked Cheryl, who was nursing her, "How do you do this? How do you do this?" And she was talking about dying. And she said, "I've never done this before. Do this?" And Cheryl said, "Well, what did you say?" "I don't know. I haven't done it either." And when she died, which I think was only about 1 week after the time we were gathered around the table, and a couple of days after she'd been talking to Cheryl about this, she died. And Esther and Mum's sister were with her at that moment, and Cheryl was around but not actually in the room. And I think the rest of us were actually at church doing baptism that day, but it was all good. But Esther said it was just really peaceful when she died. In fact, I texted Esther last night just to make sure that I had my facts right. And Esther said, "Yes, it was really peaceful. In fact, I didn't know for sure that she had died until we checked." And I think that's the thing for us Christians. Death is a bit of a mystery, and it's an unknown, and it is an end in the natural, but it's not something we should fear. And I've been thinking about this, and I think it's actually a little bit like something we do every day or every night. And that is that it's just like falling asleep for those of us that are Christians at least. That's how death is described about 50 times in the Bible. 1 Thessalonians chapter 4, verse 13. I think we might have that one on the screen. "Brothers," this was Apostle Paul, "brothers, we do not want you to be ignorant about those who fall asleep." That's what he's talking about, death. "Or to grieve like the rest of men who have no hope." And that's how Paul described death. It's just like falling asleep. Mark chapter 5, verse 39, after Jairus' daughter had died, Jesus said this. He said, "Why all this commotion and wailing? The child is not dead, but asleep." And then he went into the room, if you remember, and he said, "Talitha kum," which meant little girl, get up. He spoke life into her, and she got up. He raised her from the dead. And today, as we sort of thinking about this, we're really just opening up this whole topic. And I want to take you to the story of Lazarus in the Bible in John chapter 11. We're going to read through most of this. So just listen and remember the story. And we're going to think about some of the things that Jesus talks about in relation to death and dying and what it's really like. So we're reading from verses 1 through to 6 and then 11 to 15 and 17 to 44. We're just leaving out a few verses for the sake of time. Now, a man named Lazarus was sick. He was from Bethany, the village of Mary and her sister Martha. This Mary, whose brother Lazarus now lay sick, was the same one who poured perfume on the Lord and wiped his feet with her hair. Remember that? So the sisters, this is Mary and Martha, sent word to Jesus, "Lord, the one you love is sick." Now, Jesus was pretty close to these guys. They were real good friends to Jesus. When he heard this, Jesus said, "This sickness will not end in death. No, it is for God's glory, so that God's Son may be glorified through it." Who was he talking about? He's speaking about God's Son. He was speaking about himself. I'm going to get some glory out of this. God's going to get some glory out of this situation. Then he said to his disciples, I've missed that a bit. Back to verse 5. Jesus loved Martha and her sister and Lazarus, yet when he heard that Lazarus was sick, he stayed where he was for 2 more days. And we're just going to leave out that next little bit, go down to verse 11. And after they'd been talking about some different things, after he'd said this, he went on to tell them, "Our friend Lazarus has fallen asleep, but I'm going there to wake him up." And his disciples replied, "Lord, if he sleeps, you'll get better." See, they were thinking that Jesus was just talking about a natural sleep. He's fallen asleep, and if he's sick and he's asleep, he's going to get better. That's what they thought. Logical, isn't it? So then he told them plainly, "Lazarus is dead. And for your sake, I'm glad I was not there so that you may believe. But let us go to him." Can you see how clearly Jesus sees death? He sees it as falling asleep. Because he said, first of all, he said, "Now Lazarus is just asleep. He's always going to get better then." "Oh no, you guys don't understand. What I really mean is that he's dead. But in my eyes, he's not actually, it's not the end, he's just asleep. And one way or another, this guy's going to wake up." But for Lazarus, it was going to be back in this life. But for most of us, it's going to be in the next. Isn't that cool to think that, because you know, sleep is a strange thing, isn't it? You know, you sort of lie down and then if you're tired, you just sort of drift off and you're asleep. It's so cool. And then hours later, you just wake up, and most of the time, we don't even realize how long it's been or what's been going on all around the world while we've been asleep. It's a really strange thing, sleep, isn't it? But it's a good thing because it refreshes us, and when we wake up, there's a new day. And I think that's what we need to realize, is that dying is just like falling asleep. And when we wake up, it's going to be a new day and a better day. Anyway, let's carry on. We're in verse 17. On his arrival, now Jesus finally did get there, Jesus found that Lazarus had already been in the tomb for 4 days. Bethany was less than 2 miles from Jerusalem, and many Jews had come to Martha and Mary to comfort them in the loss of their brother. They were well known, these guys. Well known family. When Martha heard that Jesus was coming, she went out to meet him, but Mary stayed at home. "Lord," Martha said to Jesus, "if you had been here, my brother would not have died. But I know that even now, God will give you whatever you ask. See, she had some faith, but it wasn't quite enough to believe that Jesus could bring him back to life after 4 days. Jesus said to her, "Your brother will rise again." And Martha answered, "I know he will rise again in the resurrection at the last day." You see, Jews believe in the resurrection. She believed in the resurrection of the dead. She knew it wasn't the end for her brother. And so she had some hope, but she didn't expect to see him physically again. But isn't it interesting how our beliefs shape what we do? You know, Martha believed she was going to see him again. At least she had some hope in there. And Jesus said to her, "I am the resurrection and the life. He who believes in me will live, even though he dies, and whoever lives and believes in me will never die." Do you believe this? Now, Jesus actually, that's an amazing statement. We're going to look at it again in a minute. And I'm thinking you guys should really look at this at Life Group and see what Jesus is really saying in this, because there's a bit in this. "Yes, Lord," she told him, "I believe that you are the Christ, the Son of God, who was to come into the world." That's a powerful faith statement that Martha made there. You know, we think of Martha as the one who was busy doing all the practical stuff, but she was a woman of faith as well. That statement that she made, yes. What did she say? "Yes, Lord," she told him, "I believe that you are the Messiah. You're the anointed one. You're the Christ who is to come, the Son of God." And after she had said this, she went back and called her sister Mary aside. "The teacher is here," she said, "and is asking for you." When Mary heard this, she got up quickly and went to him. Now, Jesus had not yet entered the village. He was still outside, but was still at the place where Martha had met him. When the Jews who had been with Mary in the house comforting her noticed how quickly she got up and went out, they followed her, supposing she was going to the tomb to mourn there. When Mary reached the place where Jesus was and saw him, she fell at his feet and said, "Lord, if you'd been here, my brother would not have died." She said exactly the same as Martha. When Jesus saw her weeping and the Jews who had come along with her also weeping, he was deeply moved in spirit and troubled. "Where have you laid him?" he asked. "Come and see, Lord," they replied, and Jesus wept. Then the Jews said, "See how he loved him." But some of them said, "Oh, couldn't he have opened? Could not he open the eyes of the blind man and have kept this man from dying?" See, even in that sort of moment, some of them were just mocking. Others were acknowledging the relationship and the love that Jesus had. And Jesus, once more deeply moved, came to the tomb, and it was a cave with a stone laid across the entrance. "Take away the stone," he said. "But Lord," said Martha, the sister of the dead man, "by this time there's a bad odor, for he's been there for 4 days." And there probably was. Then Jesus said, "Did I not tell you that if you believed, you would see the glory of God?" And so they took away the stone. Then Jesus looked up and said, "Father, I thank you that you have heard me. I knew that you always hear me, but I said this for the benefit of the people standing here, that they may believe that you sent me." When he had said this, Jesus called in a loud voice, "Lazarus, come out." And the dead man came out, his hands and feet wrapped with strips of linen and a cloth around his face. Jesus said to them, "Take off the grave clothes and let him go." What a celebration that must have been. What a powerful moment. The significant thing is that actually this was only just a little while before the crucifixion. They were right outside Jerusalem. And one of the reasons that the disciples were hesitating and some of the discussion that we missed out was talking about the safety and the wisdom of Jesus going back to Jerusalem, because they already knew that they were trying to kill him. And he said, they're saying, don't go back to Jerusalem. He said, I've got to go. Lazarus, he's our friend. What an amazing celebration they must have had when he came back to life the way that he did after 4 days. I think it shows to us that to God, death is not a problem. It's a problem to us because we see from the side of it. We see the limited side of it. But Jesus sees the fact that really it's just like falling asleep. Not a big deal to God. In verse 25, where Jesus said, I am the resurrection and the life. He who believes in me will live, even though he dies. And whoever lives and believes in me will never die. In 1 Corinthians chapter 15, verse 54, which is actually a quote from Isaiah 25, verse 8, which says this, death has been swallowed up in victory. Death is not something for us Christians to fear. Bible's very clear about that. 50 times the Bible tells us death is just like falling asleep. 500 times, that's over 10 times as many times, God wants us to know that heaven is a real place. Death is not a problem to God. And one thing that I've noticed is that whenever I've seen a dead person, and I've seen a few over the years, you just look at them and you know they're not there. Do you know what I mean? You see, there's no life there. There's no personality. There's nothing. They're not even, they're just dead. They're not there. They're gone. Because our spirit and our soul live on. And our flesh is what dies away. And so this is really just the introduction to our series. I wanted to deal with a little bit the process of death and dying. And next week, or over the next few weeks, I want to talk about different aspects of this whole thing. Where does our spirit and our soul actually go to after we die? I want to talk about things along the way, like euthanasia, for example. And things like, is there more than one heaven? The Bible actually talks about that. Do we get new bodies, actually? Can our loved ones see us? Can Marty's mum and my mum and Mrs. Koenig's actually look down and see us? So these sort of things we might just sort of chat about. There's not always answers for all of them, but amongst other things, we'll talk about Jesus and the difference that he's made and what's going to happen when he returns. We might talk a little bit about judgment and rewards. Are we going to be judged? Are we going to get rewards in the next life? Of course, we need to talk about things like heaven and hell and Hades. We might even talk about numbering our days and making our days here count as well. So that's sort of where we're going with this, and I don't quite know how it's going to unfold, but we've just made a start. Okay, so bless you guys. Hope you've been not too depressed and discouraged. How about if we stand and just get ready to worship God?